Workers of the Earth, I bring you tidings of peanuts and zombie takeout. Welcome to episode 42 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie podcast. That's right, it is the infamous, the much-touted, the slightly delayed episode 42.
Episode 42. What's up, everybody? I'm Scotto.
Oh, and I'm Uncle John. I get the introductions once again.
Well, you're excited. It's episode 42.
Yes, yes. Yes, the much-touted episode 42, and for the hopefully only a few of you who haven't figured it out.
Really, I mean, if you have not figured it out, you really need to read more. That's the only thing I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, apologies for missing last week. One of us was having some PC issues.
Yes, I kind of posted a little update on Facebook, you know, on the Facebook page as what was going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, getting back to the movie at hand, of course, it is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy from 2005.
Hard to believe it's from 2005.
Yeah, yeah. We had some debate about this one. We were going to do the BBC version, but first off, we had some trouble getting a hold of that copies of that one, and also we realized it's a mini-series, so a little out of our... So we did the 2005 one, which I think was a good choice, having seen it again.
You know, and it's funny, we thought this might have been too...
mainstream.
I mean, it is kind of on the mainstream side for us, but it really didn't get the box office it deserved.
No, and it is Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
We had to choose, it's 42, we had to do Hitchhiker's Guide, and we had to choose between one of the two, so.
I think we made the right choice as well.
Absolutely. And now it's time for Scotto's impromptu plot summary.
And Uncle John, this week we have something very special for our sponsors.
We
actually have a celebrity endorsement, a very special guest, Mr. Bob Chase. Take it away, Bob.
Scotto's impromptu plot summary is brought to you this week by the number 42, the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor, and the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster. It's like having your brain smashed out with a slice of lemon wrapped around a large gold brick.
Thank you, Mr. Chase. That was wonderful as always.
Of course. Thank you, Bob.
Well, the impromptu plot summary for this, it's kind of hard to follow. I always loved the... I think it was one of the backs of one of the books where it's about the end of the world and the happy-go-lucky days that follow.
yeah.
I always loved that description because, yes, it begins with the planet Earth being demolished.
Blown up.
To make way for a hyperspace bypass, which, of course, you got to have a hyperspace bypass.
Mm-hmm.
And
people got to get from A to B.
Right, exactly. There are only two Earthlings that have survived this. One of them has been, jetting around the galaxy with the president of the galaxy in a stolen ship. The other one's kind of the unfortunate Arthur Dent, who in this movie, for years, you know, I had thought this was Sean Astin that had played him.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't until I went back and watched, I'm like, wait a minute. First I was like, wow, his English accent is awesome.
So you weren't familiar with the original Office the first time you saw this?
Kind of. Well, you know, probably not when I first saw this. No.
Okay.
No, not until later. But yes, yeah, so I turned off, like, wait a minute, that's not Sean Astin. Because I thought, you know, wow, awesome. You know, he got to do Lord of the Rings and Hitchhikers?
Yeah.
Not him. my mistake. But anyway, he is Arthur Dent, who had his house demolished before the Earth was demolished in the same way, is left, well, to explore the whole galaxy on his own with his friend Ford Prefect, who I don't know how many years it was when I read the books thinking it was Ford Perfect.
Same here.
I think when I saw the BBC version, like a decade after I first read the book, this Prefect here?
I think it was, again, some years later for me when I actually found out about the car.
yeah.
that he was named after that I finally got it.
Right. So he's left. Ford is, of course, a writer for this Guide to the Galaxy. And the only entry, of course, for the planet Earth, which I don't even remember them getting into the movie.
No, they
the
didn't.
The entry for the planet Earth was that it was mostly harmless.
Mm-hmm. I can't say definitely, but I didn't notice it in the book in the movie either. But there were a lot of those book sections that were cut.
I could have sworn I remembered when I first saw this in the theater that they did.
Okay.
And you know, had some sort of argument
maybe
about
just,
it.
Maybe we both just missed it this time.
Yeah, but I don't know. Kind of weird. I don't remember seeing it in the DVD version.
Mm.
So, yeah, they wander around the galaxy. In this particular version, we've got John Malkovich as Huma Kavula.
Huma Kavula.
Huma Kavula. And he has... It's too much to really give. There's too much detail.
Yeah. You don't want to... Can't really go into too much. It also... Particularly about Huma Kavula, because it will ruin too much, I think.
Right. They wind up trying to figure out... well, actually, Zaphod has... Or Zaphod, as I think they usually call him.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on a quest to try to find the answer, or the question, to life, the universe, and everything.
Mm-hmm. The answer is, of course, 42.
42, yeah. And that winds up taking them to, to the people who made the planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much our impromptu plot summary.
Now,
I think it's pretty different from the book.
Well, before we get into specifics, I want to point out, for the three people, hopefully not many more, who don't understand this, this series of books, and there were, what, five, six?
I just found out before this show, there is a sixth one that was written by somebody else.
Oh, wow.
2 years ago.
Okay, so there's five that were written by Douglas Adams that actually count.
Right.
Now, to a certain segment of the population that I proudly count myself among, the geeks, these are practically holy books.
Yeah.
So the importance of these books cannot be understated.
Right.
And so any adaptation is going to be highly suspect.
No argument from me here. I mean, it's... I don't know how many times I've read the first book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've read it multiple... I almost read it again for this if I didn't have so much computer stuff to work on.
I was going to
read it before the episode.
Yeah, I was tempted to, but I did look through the Wikipedia entry and refresh my memory enough. Now, there were a lot of... you mentioned the most harmless entry for the guide. There were a lot of the guide entries that were cut.
Well, yeah.
Which is one of my complaints. I mean... I know they have to do that stuff for time, and they really are just quick jokes. But they cut the reason God ceased to exist, which was one of my favorites. What was another one? I know there were a few others that they cut that I really liked.
Oh, I bet. But there were so many. This movie would have been like 4 hours if they had
re-entry
in it.
This is true.
Now, really, they should go and just do the entire book, honestly.
Yeah. And just the first book, because the BBC version has a lot more because it's a 6 hour, if not more, miniseries.
Right, they go into restaurant at the end of the
exactly.
universe.
Exactly, they went through the second book.
Which, how they were planning on making that into a movie, beyond me.
Yeah.
I have no idea how you'd make that into a full feature-length movie.
And I gotta say, aside from the Huma Kavula storyline, this one is actually a very faithful adaptation of the first book.
You knew all these people loved the book.
Yeah.
All of them.
And for those criticizing because the Huma Kavula storyline, because there were a lot of people complaining about that, I think that's the only reason a lot of people who love the books didn't like it. You should understand, there have been, I think, 9 versions of Hitchhiker's Guide in different medias.
Yeah.
I think the count was up to 9. I don't know what all of them were. It started with a radio play, so the book wasn't actually even the first version.
No.
And every time, Douglas Adams changed it.
Right, he had this one version where it just began with like this 6-part thing of him destroying the Earth at the end in a different way.
Yeah.
And the only thing that mattered, you know, I mean, he realized he needed to add an alien to give it context.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the alien doing on Earth? And then that's how it became Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Right, right.
I mean, he's writing for that, and then
it just went from there.
Right.
And so you need an everyman that people can relate to. So you have Arthur, and you know,
and
Snowball.
A lot of people also forget this screenplay was, you know, Douglas Adams began writing this himself.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't just something that Hollywood picked up and did.
No, no.
He was writing this himself, so he very much could have added that. But who better to play him than John Malkovich?
Oh, no, Muhammad Kavula did add, was added by Adams. That was his final edition.
Yeah.
Well, it turned out to be his final edition to the story. Yeah, Malkovich was perfect. but going back to the beginning, just rolling it back a little bit.
Yeah.
The opening song. it was perfect. It jumps you in and tells you exactly what you're in for.
Right.
It's from the perspective of the dolphins, who's turned out to be the second smartest life form on the planet, and their final message to humankind, so long and thanks for all the fish. And it just gives you an idea, particularly, and I feel bad for anyone who saw this without being familiar with the books.
Yeah.
Because it has to confuse you if you don't know what you're getting into.
And it's an amazing, you know, it's a very existential movie if you think about it.
Yeah.
I guess the whole story.
Yeah.
You could look in that point of view.
Mm-hmm. That's if I had any criticisms of the original of the books, of the whole concept, I think that's the one criticism I have. Is that it does get a little heavy-handed with the messages?
Well, in that regard, it's perfect for kids. Really,
yeah.
This should be reading material. I'm not even high school perhaps, or even middle school maybe. Mm-hmm. It might be too
high school
deep for middle school. But I think this should be read in every high school,
yeah, absolutely.
In the United States, probably not the world.
And I think at that age, you kind of like the heavy-handedness, because I was in my early 20s when I read it for the first time.
Yeah.
And I liked the heavy-handed, obvious messages, because I agree with – well, I still agree with most of them. But,
who is this God person anyway?
Exactly. as I've gotten older, they've kind of become a little unsolved for me, if the word.
Yeah, you know, I probably will go back and read these again just to see it with the, you know, fresh eyes, and to really compare what the movie did to this original story here, or second rendition of the story.
Yeah,
I don't
second.
Know what you could even say.
I think the books are the second. I'm not exactly
it's
sure.
It's probably even more than that. It's probably about the third at this point.
Again, there were nine, and I can only think of four. So.
I mean, as far as the book series go, the one I remember not liking the most was probably the last one that Douglas Adams wrote, Mostly Harmless.
Yeah.
And he, seeing that he agreed, and he was going to write a sixth one before, but he, you know, he passed
away.
Yeah. So that's why somebody else took it up and wrote it, because it ended with too much of a downer.
Yeah, and he
was right. You could see really reading that book, it was like, you could see how ticked he was that he was writing another Hitchhiker's
Guide. Yeah, he just wanted to be done with it, I think. Mostly Harmless always seemed to me like the contractual obligation book.
Well, right. He was just so mad that he had to write another book, and was it. He was ending it in all possible ways. But, you know, he wanted to end it on a more upbeat note, and then he'd...
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately.
You don't get to have the last word sometimes.
Mm. Now, I mentioned that the heavy-handed messages were my one criticism of the source material.
Mm-hmm.
If I had one criticism of the movie, getting this back to where we should be talking about.
Oh, right, right.
And again, I mean one criticism, because, yeah, some of my favorite parts were cut, but any movie to book, any book to movie adaptation, your favorite parts are going to be cut, you know?
Well, right. Maybe they should have just gone for it.
Yeah.
Because this is too British of a movie to really please the mainstream American audience anyway. So just go for it, you know?
But again, it would have been, as you said, 5 hours long. That's not
and
really...
And Hitchhiker's fan wouldn't have sat through it.
Well, of course. But that's, I can't really count the cuts as a criticism, because you know that's going to happen. My one serious criticism is Zooey Deschanel.
Really?
I don't understand why she has a career.
I had completely forgotten she was in this, honestly. I was like, oh, really? Because we had just actually been down to the park to, like, see her and him play, or she and him play.
Uh-huh.
And there she was again on my TV screen. Okay.
Because she always plays these same monotone characters. She plays one character. She has for her entire career.
But this worked so well for her.
I don't think she was right for Trillian.
I can't think of anybody else, honestly. I think she was perfect for it.
No, because Trillian is sort of the one who, in a sense, kind of propels the story in a lot of ways. She's the one who's just willing to jump into anything.
Yeah.
And Zooey Deschanel is just way too... what's the word I'm looking for? Bland for that.
I think her sister is the better actress.
Well, I've only seen her, Emily Deschanel, I've only seen her in Bones.
Yeah.
She's done a great job there, but I'd have to see her in more to really judge her acting work. But she was really my only serious criticism. Now, on the positive side, what'd you think about the Star Destroyer shot?
The Star Destroyer?
When you first see the Vogon ship?
Oh,
and they pulled that long tracking shot.
Yeah.
That just happened to catch my attention. Because if you've got a massive spaceship, you kind of have to do that at this point.
Yeah, I guess somebody will think of some other way of...
Yeah, but it's not compelling isn't quite the right word. Too tempting of a reference.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Mr. Lucas. But, I mean, this cast is just insane.
Oh, the rest of the cast I can't complain about at all. Mos Def... really, again, surprises me. I never expect him to be good.
No, you don't. You never expect him to be good. But he is.
I first heard about him when he was hosting Deaf Poetry, and I knew him as a poet and a host. And then I found out he's a rapper.
Yeah, his acting career actually goes back a while.
Okay.
Yeah, he had I'm not sure where it was. It was You Take the Kids, it was called. It was from, like, 1990. It only lasted a season or so, but... Mm-hmm. He's had an acting career before he had a rapping career or anything else.
Okay. Because he was great in The Italian Job, which is a bit of a guilty pleasure of mine. It's a Marky Mark movie. and he was brilliant. There was, I think it was an HBO movie with someone else from The Hitchhiker's Guide cast, Alan Rickman, called, I think it was called And the Lord Made, which was amazing. So I never expect him to be a good actor, but he always surprises me.
I would take him over Marky Mark.
Oh, absolutely, please. Don't even get me started. Well, the fact that we're both calling him Marky Mark kind of says a lot there.
So, I mean, he was good at the one episode of House he did. And, of course, the funny thing, though, is reading these books back in the 80s, and, I guess I'd always read with the mind of a director, thinking about who I would cast and what. I'd always saw Ford Prefect as Rutger Hauer.
Wow. Really?
Yes. Well, back in the 80s, when you're reading this, he's younger and everything.
I never saw him. I've always seen him kind of skinny and geeky and kind of how Mos Def played him.
I had seen him as the guy who pretty much knew what was going on, the guide in a way. And
I can see your perspective now. Yeah, I kind of get
with the confidence.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
It's funny how we're doing, like, I guess you can't, this wouldn't be a remake, but this would just kind of be like...
Well, for later, I have extensive remake notes. I have a whole...
like, this is more of a pre-make deal for me.
Continuing with the cast, of course, as I alluded to earlier, Arthur is played by Martin Freeman, best known as the original Jim from The Office. I can never remember the character's name.
Yeah.
The British version of The Office.
Right.
Sam Rockwell as Zaphod impressed me.
You know, I did not even put him to, that's, Rockwell... And
the facial hair and the long blonde hair, and he's not
exactly
really
right. I mean, I'd seen this, I don't know how many times, I never put the two together really. But that's him. But I mean, Arthur Dent, when I was reading this originally, you know who I saw that? I always saw Michael Palin in that role.
Definitely could see Palin.
Yeah.
actually have a bit of trivia which would get to, if I'm going British, my choice. Jack Davenport was considered for the role of Arthur Dent, but in the end was that he was simply too good-looking for the role of the ultimate everyman.
Yeah.
Douglas Adams had originally wanted Hugh Grant to play Arthur, but the idea was nixed. Now,
sometimes I don't know what got into Douglas Adams' head, but Hugh Grant.
However,
that's awful.
I don't care if he's too good looking. Davenport would be amazing.
Yeah, he would have been.
Yeah. I mean, effectively, Arthur isn't very far from Steve from coupling, but.
Or if you really wanted to get good, of course, there's always Richard Coyle.
Well, I don't see him as Arthur. Maybe if I'm going British, and the reason I'm saying if I'm going British, I have an American cast worked out for later. But if I'm going British, I can see maybe Coyle as Ford.
Where from?
Huh?
Where was he from?
Richard Coyle, Jeff from Coupling.
I
can see him as Ford.
You see Ford? I couldn't see him as Ford.
We have a very different vision of Ford, apparently.
Yeah.
Let's see, who else? Alan Rickman is Marvin, who was great. But Rickman's great in everything.
In fact, you could probably take the cast of Coupling and put them in here and have a pretty damn good movie.
Actually,
think about it.
Parts of it, anyway. what was his name? Patrick. I can't think of the actor's name. Ben Miles.
Zaphod.
Of course. now, I'm blanking on the real name. Susan from Coupling, the actress's name I'm blanking on, would have a great triumph.
Well, yeah, you have one as a trillion. One, I guess, would be Deep Thought.
Yeah, okay.
And by the way, we have to talk about the real cast here, the computer voices. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Helen Mirren is Deep Thought.
That's Helen Mirren, okay. I did not know that.
Stephen Fry as the narrator and the guide.
I mean, Stephen Fry is the go-to for that.
And this one stunned me. Eddie the Computer, Thomas Lennon, best known as Lieutenant Dangle from Reno 911.
Oh, wow. The name rang a bell, but I couldn't place it until you said that.
He's an awesome actor. I mean, anytime he's on Craig Ferguson, you have to watch him, the two of them, act against each other.
I can hear it now that you say the name, but I had no idea.
Wow, the whole ship is going to be destroyed in just 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And, of course, Alan Rickman is Marvin.
Yeah, I mentioned Rickman, yeah.
And he gets into everything, man. Mm-hmm. I mean,
should.
I would love to see, like, the scripts on his table, what he's getting.
Yeah.
You know, just amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you have to say, you know, when he was slumming it would be to do Dogma.
Yeah, yeah. Dogma. Yeah. Some would say the Harry Potter movies, although I like them.
Was he in Harry Potter too?
He was in. He's played a regular role in all the Harry Potter movies.
I guess it's a dumb question to ask that he's in Harry Potter. Of course he's in Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. It's amazing he wasn't in Lord of the Rings also.
Yeah, yeah. Come to think of it,
what were they thinking?
I'm sure he was. I'm sure they offered him Sauron.
Surprised he wasn't in Star Wars.
In the prequels, yeah. If they hadn't brought back Ian McDiarmid for the role, I think he would have been a great Palpatine.
Yeah. But we've wandered, huh?
Yeah, we're going to wander this week, and I think we're going to run along this
week. We're talking about Rickman, you know? You can wander when you're talking about Rickman.
I've pretty much given up on my notes at this point.
Yeah. It's kind of like the plot of Hitchhikers. Mm-hmm. It's going to get messy when you're talking about it and trying to cram it into one summary.
And as I just glanced at my notes and just decided to give up on them, I found the other thing that they cut from the guide that I was disappointed by.
What's that?
The importance of towels.
Yeah, you know, I guess they really should have explained that. But I don't know. There's something about them having it. If you're not familiar with the book and them just going,
yeah, yeah.
Hey, don't forget your towel.
You always know where your towel is. And yeah, it kind of makes you wonder. Yeah, that I that had occurred to me. It's just great to leave it open like that.
And they have so many uses for it, too. He gives it to Trillian when she's in the shower.
Yeah. Well, that's if you watch and you catch all the uses of towels, you realize maybe Adams is onto something.
Yeah. They're trying to escape using the towel.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I have to call back to a previous episode of ours. And something occurred to me. And I think Kevin Smith may have pulled some inspiration from this movie. Not from this movie, but from Hitchhiker's
book,
Guide.
Of course.
From the book. Is it me or are Dante and Arthur the same person? Pretty much.
You know, they're both the everymen.
Who can't move on with their life and are stuck literally in where they are. And are forced to move on and forced to do something with their lives.
Well, yeah,
sort of. They
have to have something, you know, some sort of sign to come down and move them along.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've hit our cast here.
Yeah.
Wow, there's just so much.
Mm.
Or overwhelmed.
Yeah, I'm just going to get into some trivia now that we're at a bit of a lull. Well, as we've mentioned, Huma Kavula was created for this version. Now, there were some cameos of Douglas Adams in the movie.
Really?
His head appears as a planet during Slarty Bartfest's tour.
Slarty Bartfest.
During the tour of the factory floor, when he says, well, the line, "Welcome to our factory floor," in the background, you can see a blue planet, kind of Earth-like, shaped like a head. There's also a portrait of Adams and his wife somewhere in the Heart of Gold. I did not notice it, though. I looked two or three times. I didn't catch it. And also, there are some handles in the cupboard in Kavula's place that are shaped like Adam's nose.
Okay.
So, you know, author cameos. It says here, now, this is a bit of trivia that I have to disagree with.
Right.
It says that, well, not this first part, the car that Ford introduces himself to is a Ford Prefect, which just kind of fits.
Right.
And it says that's where Ford got his Earth name. But when he and Zaphod meet on the Heart of Gold, Zaphod calls him Ford. You know, and they knew each other before he came to Earth. So.
Yeah.
He had to have had the name Ford Prefect before he went to Earth.
And, you know, you're right, because I remember in the book, he does talk about, you know, picking his name and thinking that that was going to be...
Oh, that's right. I forgot
that
about that part.
That was
conspicuous. Yeah.
Not realizing, of course, he named himself after a car.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. It's a mistake that Zaphod would refer to him by
his human
name.
Earth name. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, according to Douglas Adams... He wanted to name the character Slarty Bartfest. I've never been able to say that name.
Right.
He wanted to name the character to sound extremely rude, but still pass BBC rules on what could be broadcast. He actually started with the name Farty Fuckborals and changed it bit by bit until it was acceptable.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's good.
Because I always wondered how he came up with that name. Now
right.
I know.
And why. You know, like, what was he thinking? You knew there was a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
You just didn't know where it was.
Speaking of cast, Slarty Bartfest, played by the great Bill Nye, who was, again, brilliant.
The science guy?
Did I say Bill Nye?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is Bill Nye.
Yeah,
there's two. There's a British one and an American one. I thought I got the name wrong for a second there. But yes, the British Bill Nye, who was the one redeeming factor in the Evolution series, amongst other things. Or not Evolution, in Underworld. I think the second one was Underworld Evolution. The
okay.
Underworld series, the one. But he's done a lot of great work. That just happened to hit me. Like I said, we're going to ramble here, and it's not going to make much sense. Also, the movie was first optioned in 82 by producers Ivan Reitman, Joe Medjuk, and Michael C. Gross. Douglas Adams wrote three drafts for them per his contract. During this time, Medjuk and Gross were considering Bill Murray or Dan Aykroyd to play Ford Prefect. Interesting choices.
Trying to think
let me finish. But
sure.
Then Aykroyd sent them his idea for Ghostbusters, and they made that instead. They were making Hitchhiker's Guide when Aykroyd came up with Ghostbusters.
Tough to say. I mean,
I think Murray.
Yeah.
But again, like as we've established, I have a very different vision of Ford.
Yeah, I could see Ackroyd playing Ford.
I see him more as an Arthur Dent.
They're almost interchangeable, actually. Because, you know, Murray can do... It depends on what you're looking for in your Ford. If you're looking for your brain, your I guess just the facts, because, you know, Ackroyd's always playing Friday.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, then you put Ackroyd. If you're looking... I'd see Murray as more Zaphod, although you could do Arthur Dent as well, because, of course, we all know Bill Murray is one hell of a versatile actor.
Oh, of
course.
Yes, yes.
And
he can do anything.
You know, Ackroyd could also do the down-in-his-luck everyman, too.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But I couldn't see him as Zaphod.
No, he's a little too serious.
Yeah.
He's the straight man. He's a straight man.
Yeah.
And Ford is not a straight man.
Right.
Arthur is, effectively, Arthur is the straight man for this entire movie.
Yeah. Or he's Alice in the Wonderland.
Effectively,
you know,
yeah.
He's us taking all of this in for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one thing I noticed they cut out is, I believe they refer to Arthur as Monkey Man at one point.
Yeah, there's a couple of references for Ape, for being a descendant of apes. I think maybe he did call him Monkey Man or something along those lines.
They do cut out some of that, but I don't think he gets called Monkey Man.
Okay.
They do make some hint, that he's descended from apes, and there was evolution in play.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't get around. You know, Zaphod doesn't call him Monkey Man.
Okay,
he did in the book.
Oh, by the way, you saw the BBC version, right?
Yes.
Now, did you notice the one reference to it? What I'm assuming, actually, I'm guessing it would be probably a reference to the radio dramas as well, which I've yet to hear.
No, I didn't.
The theme music for the guide itself was the same.
Oh, yeah?
When you first, when the narrations of what's in the guide start, and you get that big fanfare, it's the same as the original of the BBC version, probably carried over from the radio version. That just happened to catch my attention.
Well, there's so many things. Try to see where the co-writer, the person that at least took this from, Douglas Adams, and where they, they were thinking of he's a person that, like, wrote Chicken Run.
Uh-huh.
He's a British writer himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Charlotte's Web, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. And he did this?
And he did this.
Interesting.
I'll just helped finish it up, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Script doctor.
Yeah. So, anything else? Are we going into the...
Just a couple of minor little things.
Sure.
Why were there crabs on Planet Vogster?
I don't know, but they certainly like to play around with the crabs.
Yeah, yeah. That just happened, with all the creativity in this adaptation and the source material especially, why are they just literally looking, they look exactly like crabs? And also, how did Trillian not notice mice in her bag? Which is in the book, and it's one of those things you don't, it's just accept it.
They were,
there would be no story if she had.
Sneaky mice.
Yeah. Highly intelligent sneaky mice.
Very. Super intelligent.
Mm-hmm. I think that's about it for my notes. So, shall we move on to sequels and remakes?
Yes. This is huge here because this is the first of a six-part series.
Yeah. And they directly set it up for the sequel. They say, let's go to the restaurant at the end of the universe at the end.
Although, did you notice the goof? At the very end, Marvin saying, the restaurant's at the other end of the universe. And
then
going to, they're wild and crazy. They're going in the wrong direction.
I took that as a joke.
As if,
I got it. I noticed it. I took it as a joke. I think it had to have been intentional.
You think so? It is something that,
it was a nod for those who read the books and know that it's actually at the temporal end of the universe.
Right, exactly.
That it was a little joke for us. Got it, I think.
It
That's how I took
what,
it.
It could have been what Marvin was talking about. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe they were going back to the beginning.
Right.
And it was at the other end.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
It was the Heart of Gold, after all.
That's true.
So they directly set up for a sequel, which we haven't gotten yet. It's been 5 years. Douglas Adams is gone. I don't think we're going to get them.
Oh, I don't think so either. This
I think gross. it didn't sell well enough to merit a sequel, any sequels. Unfortunately,
it was over 100 million worldwide, but they were looking for twice that.
Yeah.
If it had gotten twice that, they probably would have. They probably would have gone to do the sequel.
Yeah. Now, I had read. I didn't have it in my specific notes, but I remember reading that Adams requested that the only Brit in the cast had to be Arthur.
Really?
He had to be British. Didn't matter with anybody else.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But I've actually worked out an American remake cast.
All right.
All American. As I said, if I'm going British with Arthur, I'm going with Jack Davenport. But
yeah.
for the American version, Steve Buscemi.
Oh, that would be awesome. In fact, really, this would have grossed a
Buscemi
lot more.
Buscemi is the everyman.
If they had made it a bit more American.
Yeah, yeah.
It was too British for the American mainstream audience. Very rarely wants to see something from another country.
And this is pure British humor.
Yeah.
For Ford, and again, we have a different take on Ford. Weird Al.
Oh, nice.
See, Al is sort of the epitome of my picture of Ford.
Very nice. I could definitely see that.
Somewhat less interesting, Trillian, but that fits the plot. She's somewhat less interesting. Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
Zaphod. And I'm so glad I've actually willingly plugging this actor into something, because I think he is good with comedy. Ben Affleck.
Yeah, you know, Zaphod is, of course, he has to be a leading man, you know, actor in there somewhere.
And Affleck is good in comedy. And he's got the looks and the, you know, he could play that character. This one you'll love. Marvin?
Yeah.
Steven Wright.
I thought you were going to say Hopkins, man.
That's your joke.
Steven Wright, though, would be an excellent Marvin.
And again, this is another one where if I'm going British, I'm going to go with the guy who I think Marvin was based on. Anthony Daniels.
Oh, wow.
Because Marvin was based on C-3PO.
Well,
it was written in 78. I checked the years.
Well,
Marvin had to be based on C-3PO.
But C-3PO isn't exactly as depressed.
No, he was whiny and annoying. In fact, he was paranoid. But so,
I think he said, obviously he took Lucas's, he gave the droid's personality, but what if the droid has a bad personality?
He took the idea of also, but I think the idea of the paranoid, depressive android kind of came from, not completely wholesale, ripped it off, but he was definitely an influence.
Right. He said he gave him the droid's personality.
Yeah, yeah.
What happens if they have a bad personality? Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Bartfest, I'm going in a completely different direction from the movie.
Hopkins? No.
No. Although that did cross my mind. He's the obvious Hopkins reference. But no, Mel Brooks.
Oh, yeah. Earth, the lunchbox.
Basically play him as yogurt. This one you might not be familiar with for Deep Thought. She's a voice actor, pretty much the Meryl Streep of voice actors, Grey DeLisle. She does a ton of work. For the narrator, Clancy Brown.
You know, for Deep Thought, really, you know what would have been the perfect person to have put in this movie? I mean, Helen Mirren's great, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Marshall Roddenberry.
Oh, God, yeah. Okay. Forget Grey DeLisle, all due respect. No. Marshall Roddenberry for Deep Thought, absolutely. No, wait, no, she's no longer with us, so. But yeah, she would have been amazing.
She would have been back then.
Yeah. Oh, true. For the narrator, Clancy Brown, the voice of the book. Because I love him in voice work, because you don't think of him as Clancy Brown. His voice just kind of fits whatever it does.
I say, if you want to give the guide a voice, Mark Hamill.
Wait, I'm getting to that. He was my first choice, but I found something better for him.
Okay.
Hamakavula, again, Malkovich was amazing. But I can think of... I can't top Malkovich, but there's only one other actor I can put in that role. Crispin Glover.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's perfect.
I don't know if he's better than Malkovich, but he's perfect for the role. Now, here's where we get to Mark Hamill.
Yeah, where would you put Mark Hamill in?
He was my first thought for the voice of the book, for the narrator. But then I thought about it watching the movie, seeing the hologram. The Magrathian answering machine.
What?
Because it kind of reminded me of the hologram in Jedi.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
And it was just a little reference. Just two more here. For the sperm whale. You know, the one who's just coming into existence as he's falling to Earth.
Right.
Neil Patrick Harris.
I love how you even casted the whale.
And for the voice of the Heart of Gold, Patrick Warburton.
Okay. I don't know. Thomas Lennon, though.
Oh, yeah. He was great. But I didn't want to carry over any of the cast, and Warburton's got another one of the kind of perfect voices for that.
Yeah.
Who, aside from Hopkins, who else would you see in a sequel? Any other characters I haven't brought up?
Well, really, I think Hopkins' obvious role would be Trillian in this.
Of course.
But other than that, you really couldn't see Ford Prefect played by younger Rutger Hauer, huh?
No. Again, I have that different picture of Ford. I mean, Weird Al is my perfect Ford.
The most important element of Ford is that he has to be a weird dude.
Exactly.
And Rutger Hauer is a weird dude.
Yeah.
Thinking of like Blade Runner and stuff.
Okay, yeah, I can see it.
A guy that you could logically see, in far parts of the galaxy on his own, just, the first civilized person there for the first time. And just kind of hanging out, trying to be all, like, buddy and everything would just be hilarious, too, of course.
True.
Handed beers out to everybody. Hey! No, I really I couldn't pick an American cast for this. But Buscemi as Dent.
Yeah. I went through a lot of people for Arthur until I hit Buscemi and realized, okay, no, that's perfect.
Well, obviously, I mean, wasn't Arthur Dent played by Billy Dee Williams in the other movie?
Hmm?
Oh, wrong Arthur Dent.
Oh.
What? Oh, that was Harvey Dent.
Oh, okay, right. Went over my head for a second there.
Oh, I was just being a bit two-faced, that's all.
Yes.
Really, with this version, I think they hit the nail.
Except for Zooey Deschanel, in my opinion.
Trillian isn't exactly the most
She's a throwaway.
She's kind of a straight person in this, too, because you're from Earth. The joke is on you. It's really what this whole movie is about.
Right. So, well, that's the message. God doesn't exist. The universe doesn't make sense. Life is a joke is pretty much the whole point of the source material.
Right. The universe is just utter chaos. And nobody knows what's going on, even when you get it. When you meet those aliens who you think know the answer, they don't.
the president of the galaxy is pretty much the movie star type, with just as much brains.
Well, yeah, and wow, talk about messages, hit over the head. They vote for it's what happens when you vote for the person you'd rather have a beer with than the person
who's
smarter, as smart enough to solve the problems in the world. That is what happens. He winds up kidnapping himself and stealing their high-priced spaceship. So I think we are up to brains.
Up to brains. In spite of my issues with Zooey Deschanel and my other little minor complaints, I've got to go 5.
Same here. This movie, just to even touch upon this movie, it's just, you gotta have some balls to do it.
Yeah.
And they did. And they held nothing back. They could get a better cast, really, than what they've got going here. And they even took chances, too, while doing it. I mean, putting Mos Def in. They were nuts.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw he was playing Ford, and really wasn't my idea of Ford, but he played it brilliantly, like I said.
Right. And I don't think he was my original idea of Ford. Well, of course, Rutger Hauer.
Oh, yeah.
sure, Rutger Hauer in a rap, you know, outfit. Yeah. no, I think they really hit a home run here, and it's really unfortunate that they didn't make the at least going up to Life, the Universe, and everything.
Right.
I mean,
or at least until, I would say, at least through Hitchhiker, through Restaurant, when you get the question.
Well, I think the third one, I mean, make it a trilogy, you know?
Yeah,
a real trilogy.
Yeah, fair enough.
And not go into the So Long and Thanks for All the Fish and all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, five brains here. 5 out of 5.
Okay, so what have we learned?
Always know where your towel is.
Well, not to panic.
Words live by Douglas. Thank you very much for them.
So, until next time, I will say next time instead of next week, because who knows?
Hey, I foresee nothing happening to this system in the meantime.
Okay.
All right.
So, okay, hopefully next week, when we will be doing a movie we have yet to decide on.
Yes.
Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the episode descriptions, the album art, you know, all the usual stuff. Vote. You know, we are asking you every week what you would rate the movies. Please let us know.
Yeah.
And comment and do all that good stuff.
Does Michelle even rate them?
She did once. I'm not sure if she's done any since. So until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
Activating emergency escape pod. It's super neat and fun to fly.
Thank you, Bob.
It might work better if I introduce Bob Chase to have the vocal contrast.
Okay, you want to take that again?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you're introducing yourself, you're in introductory mode, and then which is pretty close to Bob Chase.
Yeah. Well, because Bob, all I do when the only difference between my normal voice and Bob is is smiling.
You're right.
And the cadence.
I know.
And we have an outtake.
Yeah.